She'll run them all!
Katz made a one-handed rappel with his MP5 slung over his shoulder. It made him a sitting duck, but he had no other choice.
Damn!
Katz released the rope.
Shit!
Almost too late, he hit the brake. He barely slowed himself before he slammed into the ground.
Oof!
He was stunned, but not enough for him to forget to punch the release to get clear of the rope. The last thing in the world he wanted to do was take another ride. As soon as Katz shook the rope to let Grimaldi know that he was clear, the pilot broke hover. He only had 2 propane canister bombs left, but when they were gone, he still had his pistol. Trying to fire it with one hand made flying damn near impossible, but he'd done it before. On the ground, Katz keyed his comlink.
I'm down, Stryker. Where the hell are you?
Go to where they're making the most noise. We're in the middle of that.
On the way.
Though not as comfortable for him to use as his trusty old Uzi, firing an MP5 one-handed was a snap, and he had the stump of his right arm to balance it on. Coming up behind a pair of thugs, Katz swept the MP5 from left to right, the sustained burst punching both men face down on the ground.
I can use a little air support off to my right.
On the way.
Thank you.
Katz made his move.
Katz, I've got you in sight. Move to your right.
Gotcha, Stryker.
Katz spotted Bolin and raced toward him. The executioner snapped a long burst to clear the field of fire as Katz reached their hiding place. Katz ripped an MP5 magazine out of the carrier and handed it to Farjani.
Here, strip the ammo out of it and reload your magazines.
Bolin hurriedly loaded his 93R from another MP5 mag and slapped a mag into the butt of the pistol. That done, he loaded up his other mags. With that and the half mag he had remaining in the Desert Eagle, he was ready to go back to work.
I'm up.
Okay, let's get the hell out of here.
With Katz's firepower added to the mix, they started working their way backward, taking the shortest distance to the wall. Meanwhile, Napoleon Garza was having a difficult time coordinating his troops. He'd never been in a situation like this before, and his people weren't used to military-style reporting and coordination. Every man was fighting his own battle, and even his sub-leaders didn't know where their own men were.
Merrill!
Making his way along the inside of the perimeter wall, Garza tried to get around to where the firing seemed to be coming from. He wanted to get some of his men to join him and form a sweep line. Seeing movement to his side, he called on the radio.
Claude? Claude, where are you?
No answer.
Melt!
Stepping out, Garza fired half a magazine from his subgun on full auto. Bolin saw Garza's muzzle flash and slammed Katz onto the ground.
Ugh! What the hell?
Farjani was trailing them, and Bolin couldn't get to her in time. She staggered. Katz reached back for her to pull her undercover while Bolin swung around to face the threat. Garza saw his targets fall and felt that he had scored a hit. He stepped into the open and spotted one of the figures appear from the shadows. Flame appeared in the figure's hand and a stunning blow struck him. Napoleon Garza died with his chest blown open by a .44 Magnum slug. Bolin ducked back into cover. Katz was tying the ends of Farjani's camouflaged headscarf around her upper right arm.
How bad is it?
Not bad at all.
Oh, speak for yourself.
Hell, woman, it's a light hit. You're lucky.
I walk in the footsteps of Vishnu.
Well, the party's over here, so point us in the direction of those footsteps. It's time to get the hell out of Dodge.
The first thing Katz and Ellenbogen wanted when he got back to the hotel suite was his artificial arm. He quickly checked it for damage.
If you'd brought this thing with you, I could have stayed and fought my way out.
I didn't know if it had been damaged or what shape you were going to be in.
You should have known that if I wasn't dead, I'd be ready to kick some ass.
Katz slipped into his arm and tightened the straps in place.
Damn, that feels good. I hate being without my right arm. By the way, when are we going to get Dong? I'm tired of dancing around with him.
It ought to be a little easier to get him now. If I was counting right, 3 of his 4 sidekicks didn't make it out of the factory.
That's nice to know, but where do you think he's going next?
According to Aaron, an Asian matching his stats and using a Taiwanese passport took a flight to Berlin.
Hooking up with the Russian mafia?
It looks that way. and it follows his pattern so far, following the human trafficking network.
More thugs.
First, though, we have to get Jasmine the hell out of here for good.
How are you going to do that? Hand carry her?
Exactly. I had one of the young black suits flown over to escort her back.
She's going to be spitting mad, Mac.
She's not going to have any choice.
Didn't we say that last time?
Again, Bolin carried Jasmine Farjani's baggage as he walked her into the airport terminal. Brognola had sent one of the black suits to be her escort on the flight back. He wanted her back in the States, and he wasn't going to take any chances on her getting away again. He held out her ticket.
This time I'm staying with you until you get on the plane.
I guess with the wound I'm not much help to you anymore.
You've been all the help in the world, but you've got to give that arm a rest. The doctor said that it'll be good as new, and the little plastic surgery later will take care of the scar.
Never. I want to keep the scar. That way, when I start to think that this was all just a dream, I'll be able to remember what I did.
As will Lef and I.
Seeing a young, fit American tourist standing by the gate flash him a recognition sign, Bolin steered the woman toward him.
This is Dave Brown. He'll fly back with you and take care of the formalities in Atlanta.
Hello, Mrs. Farjani.
Hello, Mr. Brown. You know, I don't think Mr. Belasco here trusts me.
Let's just say that you have a track record.
She was going to miss this man more than she knew. Berlin. Dmitri Sorge leaned back in his expansive leather chair, his hand on his chin. He didn't quite know what to think about the Chinese operative sitting in front of him in his opulent downtown Gudam office. He knew about Gao Dong's activities, of course, but he had never expected to meet the man in person. They were competitors, and in his line of work, he usually garroted any of his competitors he got his hands on. He would, however, give Dong the honor of a hearing before deciding his fate.
You have an interesting story, but I'm not sure that my organization can help you in any way.
I was thinking more in terms of helping you.
Just what is it you think you can do for me, Mr. Dong?
I can give you an introduction to an entirely new and very lucrative enterprise. As I explained earlier, with Napoleon Garza and his Union Corps no longer in the business, I thought you might be interested in picking up where he left off. I know his networks, so I will be able to help you take them over.
Were you there when Garza and his people were wiped out?
The shootout in the abandoned factory in Marseille was front-page news in France. The positive identification of Garza's body hadn't escaped his notice. That was the only reason he was talking to Dong at all.
I was.
The French authorities called it a gang turf war. I know better. Who did that to him?
That American I mentioned.
One American? And why did the Americans want to do something like that? It seems like a lot of effort for them to make on something that doesn't directly affect them.
He's not official. He's a cowboy crusader working for reasons of his own.
That was an assessment Sorge would take under advisement. He'd worked against the Yankees for too long to take anything they did as being unofficial.
But how does that affect my operation? And why should I care?
That's the part where I think I can help you. There was an adjunct to Garza's operation you might not have been aware of.
Sorge leaned back in his chair.
And what might that be?
Bolin and Katz deplaned from the Lufthansa Boeing 727 at Berlin's Tempelhof Airport, which was conveniently located in the center of the city. They caught a cab to the Berlin Hilton and quickly settled into their comfortable suite.
You know, we've got us a real problem here.
Which one?
Well, to start with, this is a big place, and we haven't a clue where our guy might be holding out.
I think we can rule out him bunking up with his best buddy in the Berlin police barracks.
That's about the only place we won't find him. That and the Reichstag.
What do you suggest?
I'll be damned if I know. But the way this has gone, if we look for the biggest white slaver in Berlin, we ought to be able to get a lead on him. He's run with them so far, and with Beijing putting a price on his head, he's about out of places to hide.
Sounds like we need to get Aaron on that.
That's first on my agenda.
And while you're doing that, I'm going to contact an old friend.
Katz didn't need to know whom Stryker was going to call on. As he himself did, the executioner had a select circle of people he had crossed paths with over the years. Old friends were always a good thing to have. Stony Man Farm, Virginia. Hal Brugnola would have much preferred to have Bolin and Katz back in the States, and had told them so before they had left France. Not unexpectedly, Stryker had blown him off, so he'd gone to Plan B immediately. That was to put Stony Man on the job full-time, presidential approval or not. The sooner that Stryker caught up with Dong, the sooner he'd run out of things to do and come home. Katzen Ellenbogen's call from Berlin came as no big surprise.
Where's Stryker?
He's talking to old friends, and he left me to try to get you guys off your ass and doing something useful.
What do you need? Whatever it is, you got it.
Katz quickly gave him their conclusions as to where Dong might be hiding out.
Well, it sounds likely. We'll start running that info right now. And by the way, tell Stryker that Jasmine Farjani arrived here safely and is undergoing a debriefing right now.
That's great. That's one hardcore woman, Hal. You might want to think about having someone give her a job.
I'm working on that right now.
Good. How about patching me through to the bear?
I'm online, Katz, and I've already started looking for your guy along just those lines. Right now, the biggest player in the slave trade is a Russian named Dmitry Sergei. He works for one of the big Moscow families. He's ex-KGB, and the Germans are hot after his ass as well, but they can't pin anything on him. He's covered in layers of cutouts and dummy corporations.
Sounds like a New Jersey mafia don.
Not quite as humble, though. He lives large.
Good. I like going up against a man whose ego outpaces his common sense.
He has a security force equal to his ego, though. He's got a band of ex-KGB and Stasi toughs swarming around him like flies on a ham sandwich at an Alabama picnic in July under a full moon when the water's high.
You've been talking to TJ again.
The man does have a turn of phrase.
Give me a day to dump on this Sergei guy, and I'll start on my Interpol contacts.
On the way.
Berlin. The western side of the reunited Berlin hadn't changed all that much since the Berlin Wall fell. The greatest need for rebuilding had been in the old communist sector because the West had already been built up nicely. Mozartstrasse, one block off Nollendorfer Platz, was much the same as it had been in the 70s and 80s. Many of the shops, bars, discos, and small restaurants had changed hands, or at least their names, but the apartments in the upper floors of the block-long buildings remained the same. Bolin had no trouble finding stairwell number 119-126 Mozartstrasse. The faded paper tag on the rank of mailboxes in the entryway showed the name he sought. Rather than call ahead, he had decided to call in person, figuring that Dieter Rigmann would most likely be in. He quickly made his way to number 24 on the third floor.
Well, I haven't seen you in a while, old friend. What a surprise. Come in, please.
He led Bolin into a small living room, decorated in faded but neat 50s style.
What can I get you? Schnapps? Jägermeister? I have a fine Madeira, maybe a port. But of course, you are working. I will make coffee.
Coffee's fine.
It will take but a moment. Eva has gone these many years now, so I have had to learn how to serve my own guests. Not that I have had all that many since the fall of the wall.
Rigmann made his way to the small kitchen off of the living room.
They've put you out to pasture?
More or less, as you say. They say that the war is finally over. The evil empire, as your Reagan called it, is at last dead. Old men like me are no longer needed because our eyes are too finely attuned to seeing evil under every bed. We don't fit into a society where new evils grow unchallenged.
It's one of those new evils that I want to talk to you about. Specifically, the Russian mafia.
Rigmann came in carrying a tarnished silver tray bearing a coffee service.
I rather thought so. It's so good to be able to speak English once again. I was afraid that I had forgotten it.
Rigmann poured, gave Bolin his cup, and sat back down.
Who are you looking for this time?
Whoever's the biggest mover of women in Berlin. Human trafficking.
Dmitry Sergei. Ex-KGB, late 50s, background at the German desk, but served all over Europe.
known for living the high life and reputed to have been the whoremaster for Lubinka Street. A very nasty piece of work, Command Sergei. What do you want with him?
Actually, I'm looking for a Chinese operative who might be hiding out with him.
Very interesting.
The old spymaster leaned forward in his chair. Bolin then launched into a briefing on his activities since he had come across a gang rape in progress in L.A. When he was done, he sat back.
You do come up with interesting problems. And how is Captain Ellenbogen?
He's well, and he's in town with me.
And your other friends?
No, just he and I this time.
That you are still alive, old friend, tells me many things. One of them is that you have not lost your eye, nor your belly.
Guts, in English.
Oh, yes. You, of course, will want to know where to find Sergei.
If you can help me, yes.
The old German got up from his chair.
Give me a moment, please.
Dieter Rigmann, once a man whose name chilled the blood of communists and terrorists throughout Europe, shuffled to his office in the rear of his apartment. When he came back, he handed a big envelope stuffed full of paper to Bolin.
This should be what you need.
Thanks, Herr Rigmann.
Rigmann stiffened and bowed slightly.
It is the least I can do for someone who has done so much for my city.
I found Dieter Rigmann, Katz.
Damn, is that old Nazi still alive?
He is. And you know he wasn't a Nazi. He was just one of Galen's brightest young studs at the end of the war.
I know.
Katz glanced at the bulging envelope in his hand.
What did you get from his vault?
An ex-KGB officer named Dmitry Sergei.
Damn, that's the same guy Bear came up with.
And Rigmann doesn't even have a computer.
Who says that good old-fashioned human intelligence has gone out of style?
Oh, he asked about you. I told him you were well.
Katz didn't even want to go there.
Let's compare notes.
Kurtzman's data was extensive, but Rigmann's was more in-depth and went back to the year when Sergei had first come to town as a frontman for a mobster back in Moscow. It chronicled his career from bagman to undisputed ruler of a vast criminal enterprise extending from Eastern Europe through the West to the United States. Katz finished reading and looked up.
Looks like we need to take a closer look at this guy's home turf.
Bolin looked out the window.
It's a nice day. Let's do that.
The shores of Krimlanka had once been dotted with the minor estate houses of Berlin's old aristocracy. The Nazis had appropriated many of them, as had the Americans in turn after World War II. During the Cold War, many clandestine operations had been launched from one particular manor house, Zum Wildensau. It was a three-story mansion with enough outbuildings to have been a small village in Bavaria. The entire compound was surrounded by a 6-foot stone wall. When the Americans pulled out of Berlin after the fall of the wall, Zum Wildensau had remained derelict until Dmitry Sergei picked it up for a song. It was true that he'd had to dump a ton of his ill-gotten gains into restoring and modernizing it, but it had still been a bargain. Now, except for the Reichstag, it was the most secure location in Berlin. Sergei had spared no expense to make it that way. It was also one of the most picturesque of Berlin's old mansions. The grounds had been replanted, and the wild pigs the house was named after again roamed the fields. With the backside of the compound bordering the lake, ducks and geese wandered the lower grounds and had their nests in the rushes. Even a swan or two called the place home. Yakov Katzenellenbogen studied the manor's lower grounds through his field glasses.
We forgot to bring an army with us, Stryker.
Bolin glanced over as he piloted their small pleasure craft through the wake of one of the larger excursion boats on the popular lake.
The only thing I can't see is his air defense system, but I know it's there. I can see the radar dish.
You got everything you need for now?
Yeah. Let's go back and call the Bear.
Stony Man Farm, Virginia.
I got it, Katz. Sergei had to file plans and blueprints for his restoration project with the city building inspectors, and the work he had done was properly inspected. Further, those plans were inputted into their data banks.
What's the bad news?
Like you thought, this place has all the earmarks of a fortress. I can't tell what went in after the inspectors left, but you can see where it was intended to go.
What's the auxiliary power situation?
Not to your liking, I'm afraid. He's got a full power setup in a basement, a bank of Honda diesel generators.
What What kind of power?
Enough to drive a TV broadcasting station, and enough left over for a full satellite comm network and the world's biggest boombox.
How about some good news?
How about an airborne ranger battalion? That's about what it looks like it's going to take to get in there.
Let me look around. I seem to have misplaced my ranger battalion.
Some of Sorge's other sites aren't that well hardened, though. He's got a lot of cover places. You guys might want to try some of them instead of committing suicide.
How about a list of his business establishments?
I got those as well, Stryker, and some of them look pretty soft. Whorehouses and bars usually aren't too well fortified.
Send it all.
On the way.
Berlin. After thoroughly checking Gao Dong's story through his own sources, Dmitry Sorge had decided to keep the Chinese around as long as he was useful. As soon as he wasn't, Sorge intended to shop him back to Beijing. Dong, of course, had failed to mention that he had a price on his head, but that was all right with Sorge. If Dong didn't know that he knew, it left him vulnerable. The first rule of staying alive was never to leave anything out when you were turning your coat. To do so made your new master think that you were less than honest. And in Sorge's profession, to be less than honest was a rock-solid death sentence. He had also checked on this mysterious American agent Dong had reported to have caused all of his problems, but he didn't like what he got back on that query. Such a man did exist, or at least he once had, and he had been known to the KGB by a number of names, none of which was good news. Under any name, that man, if he was the one who had dogged Dong's heels, was the absolute last thing he needed to have to stop to deal with right now. Sorge had a number of delicate deals in the works, the culmination of months of negotiations with a number of people from several organizations, and he simply didn't need the distraction. The thought had occurred to him that after getting Garza's operation from Dong, he should shop him to the Americans instead of the Chinese. He wouldn't be paid as well, if he got anything for him at all, but it might take the heat off of him and get him a good boy badge in the CIA's books. Or it might backfire and raise his profile with them, so he would have to consider that choice carefully. Nonetheless, he'd make that decision when the time came, and this wasn't it. It was time, however, to have Dong lay out the details of the operation he had been running with the Corsican, and see how it might fit into his own operational scheme. He had to admit that having Garza 6 feet underground had saved him a lot of trouble in the future. The Corsicans had been on his short list of organizations he wanted gone. Sorge punched the button on his intercom.
Send him in.
Dong was wearing his usual game face when he walked in and took a seat. Sorge was going to see if he could remove it.
The price of my protection is that you reveal each and every last detail, not only about your Corsican operation, but everything else you are doing for China. I have learned that you are a much wanted man and very valuable to the right people. You must become more valuable to me if you wish to stay alive.
Dong didn't let any expression show on his face. He'd never thought that Beijing would have contacted men like Sorge, but it appeared that they had. This meant the end of everything he had worked for and betraying his family all the way back to the first ancestor. The alternative, though, was to kill himself if Sorge would give him that chance. He had always been willing to die for the mother country, but only in her service. Killing himself to stay out of their hands wasn't the kind of service he had envisioned doing for his ancestors.
I will do what you want.
Good.
Sorge smiled. He'd halfway expected that Dong would balk, maybe even try to kill himself as some of the captured Chinese agents he'd worked on during the old days had done. But not this time, apparently. Sorge leaned back in his chair and let Dong talk about his industrial spying project, the Dragon Egg teams, and the sideline he'd helped Garza set up to market high-tech items to third-world governments.
I have to admit that sounds as if it has possibilities. We will have to explore this further.
Dong was a little surprised at the relief he felt when the Russian said we, but he didn't allow a trace of it to show on his face. Damn all Western long noses who didn't credit his people with the ability to feel human emotions. The Han felt them, but were usually too disciplined to allow them to be paraded in public as if they were barbarians.
Let me get you settled in while I have some of my people look over your proposal. And tonight, I will show you Berlin. I know that you're well experienced with the West, but Berlin is not like any other city in the world. I think you will enjoy it.
Normally, Dong would have rather been flayed alive than have to accompany a Russian on an extended drunken debauch. Most of the Russians he'd known were pigs, and barbaric pigs at that. But this was business, and his personal survival was on the line.
I look forward to it.
Stony Man Farm, Virginia. With a full court press in progress at the farm, the single most critical element was communications intelligence. Brugnola was fully aware that Bolin was more than capable of tracking down Dong by himself, but it would take time, and he wanted the man back home as soon as possible. He and Katz had been exposed for a long time now, and every day that passed only increased the risks they were taking. The man would be more than unhappy if Stryker got put out of action, even temporarily. He knew, though, that Bolin had the bit in his teeth and wasn't going to back down until Dong was dead. He had never backed down, and the day he did would be the end of him.
How's Carnivore working, Aaron?
Carnivore was a program worked up by the NRO, National Reconnaissance Office, to supplement their series of spy satellites. Basically, it was a hacker's dream and could listen in to any kind of electronic communication system from TV signals to faxes, cell phones, Palm Pilots, landline communications, and anything else that used electricity. About the only thing it couldn't intercept was two kids talking over tin cans and a string. Kurtzman spun his chair.
As advertised, we're zeroing in on exactly which phone Sergei's using.
While Carnivore could and did pick up everything, sorting it out was the art that had to be applied to the science. Without that, it was all just electronic garbage.
How much longer? Usually this process takes days, and we're trying to do it in hours. And Sergei is not your average Euro hood. He's got secure modules on most of his stuff. But he's using last year's KGB coding, and we broke that right after it came out.
Just get it to Katz, damn it.
Right away, boss.
After digesting Kurtzman's data dump on Sergei's legitimate establishments, Bolin and Katz took a personal recon of the top dozen on the list. They were on the third stop when Katz's cell phone rang.
Yeah?
We're getting unscrambled intercepts, and several of them are about some kind of affair being set up at one of Sergei's places, the Katrina.
We haven't scoped that one out yet. When's it taking place?
It looks like he's planning an all-nighter starting at 9. We've gotten intercepts from the caterers, the other support people, and even a security force. There's been several mentions of a special visitor, and that could be your man.
It could also be someone from Moscow.
It could be, but we know Dong's in town.
Well, get on it. Goodbye. The bear's getting Carnivore hits about Sergei setting up a big party at one of his places.
Which one?
Katrina at the Europa Center.
Let's check it out.
When Bolin pulled onto the Kudam, the Katrina was right on the corner of the large mall.
Three-story, right?
Hold on.
Katz frantically thumbed through the stack of hard copy he brought with him.
Yep, three stories, two elevators, and a basement garage. One exit leading into the garage, a service door in the rear, and the entrance. That's it.
Bolin eyed the flat-topped building.
How about the roof?
Nothing noted.
Let's take a closer look.
Bolin plugged a couple of coins into the meter. They crossed the street and entered the mall. At one time, the Europa Center had been Berlin's showplace shopping and dining address. It was a bit dated now, but looked to have been recently refurbished. He remembered the space that Sergei's club now occupied as having once been two separate restaurants with shops on the upper floors. The entrance to the club was Berlin gaudy, which was to say, tasteful. The two hard-eyed guys flanking it were well-dressed, but weren't there for decoration. Sliding his eyes past them, Bolin walked up to the kiosk on the sidewalk, looked at the club's advertisements, and scanned the menu posted behind the glass.
Maybe we should have dinner here tonight.
Looks good to me.
Katz studied the background details of the photos of the acts on the stage. Since this was Berlin, there was more background than there was clothing on the dancers. They went up the stairs to the shops on the third floor opposite the atrium from Sergei's place.
No way in from that side.
Let's take a look at the roof.
There was a small observation tower on the far corner that overlooked the ruined tower of the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church. It also looked down onto the roof of the Katrina, one floor below it. Boland's eyes swept the roof below.
That looks doable.
With bolt cutters.
Dmitry Sergei was proud of the Katrina, the flagship of his business enterprises. This was the one club he had that catered to the fashionable Kudamm crowd. In Berlin, location was still everything if you wanted to be noticed. If you didn't want anyone to see what you were doing, Sergei could also handle that, but not at the Katrina. He ushered Dong in past a security man.
The mayor of Berlin had a reception in here just yesterday, and the famous Hollywood director is holding a cast party tomorrow. It was only by chance that I wasn't completely booked tonight.
Dong wasn't impressed by capitalist decadence in any form. To him, the Katrina was just another restaurant serving overly prepared food that only a barbarian could enjoy. He let himself be directed to a large table close to the stage and sat beside Sergei as uniformed waiters carrying silver champagne buckets converged on them. It was going to be a long night for Dong. Bolin had come in from the top. Katz would be approaching from the bottom. The executioner had descended from the Europa Center's observation tower to the roof of the club. Sergei didn't have security stationed up there because, after all, this was the Kudamm, and it would have looked out of place. Bolt cutters and a titanium pry bar had got him through the access door leading into the club, and now he waited in the laundry service room inside. In the basement, Katz breezed past the guy in the parking booth and slipped into the elevator at the other end. Taking a titanium lock wedge out of his pocket, he jammed it into the sliding door to block it open. That done, he moved on down to the locked back door leading into the club. That took a little longer to get through, but he was equipped for the task. Had Sergei placed a guard there, he was prepared for him as well, but no human eyes were watching. Being on the Kudamm had given Sergei a caveat that had softened the Russian's instincts. Who would want to attack one of Berlin's premier dining experiences? Katz keyed his comlink.
Stryker, I'm in.
Bolin didn't bother with the contents of the rooms on the upper floors as he made his way to the dining room. The Berlin police could sort out who was doing what to whom later. His mission was one man in the dining room, maybe two if the opportunity presented itself. One shot, and his work would be done. Two at the most. The second floor landing, though, presented a problem in the form of a pair of security men. Both of them were looking down onto the dining area and stage and weren't watching their back. The executioner approached them.
Hey, got a light?
The closer goon turned and saw a tall man in evening dress approaching, a cigarette holder in his left hand. One of the boss's guests.
I'm sorry, sir. You're not... Oh!
His partner spun and collected another bullet.
Scheiße!
The goon staggered backwards, lost his balance, and the impact tumbled him over the railing onto the table below. Instant chaos broke out in that corner of the room, and Sergei leaped to his feet. Not knowing what was going on, Dong looked around at the second floor open landing and saw a tall, black-haired man standing at the railing. The man smiled as he brought a big pistol from behind his back.
The American!
Dong dived under the table. The first round tore through the thick wooden table close to Dong's head.
No!
Ah! The second shot tore into his back. Dong didn't hear the third shot at all. Katz waited in the corridor leading to the dining room, his back to the stairwell leading into the basement. A flashbang, the pin pulled, was in his artificial hand, and his good hand was wrapped around the butt of his mini Uzi, the sound suppressor attached to the muzzle. The dining room was a scene of chaos. Well-dressed men and women were trampling on one another in their rush to get out of the restaurant before more shots were fired. The neatly uniformed waiters had all disappeared, and the only people on their feet were Sergei and his thugs.
There! In the corridor! He has a gun! Get him!
A pair of gunmen raced forward, pistols in their hands. Katz tossed the flashbang into the room and turned his head to protect his vision. Since the grenade had landed at the feet of the gunman, they were down for the count. Bolin huffed down the stairs behind Katz.
Go! I'll cover you.
Yeah!
Katz split for the stairs, and Bolin stepped out into the dining room. Since he was on the scene and had a few seconds to waste, he might as well make a clean sweep. Rigman had included a photo of Sorgay in his package, so he knew whom he was hunting for.
Come on! Get them, you lazy bastards! Now! Now! What are you afraid of?
Sorgay was standing at the back of the room, shouting as he drew a Stechkin machine pistol from inside his coat. Bolin knew the Stechkin climbed badly on full auto and didn't drop his stance. He also wasn't giving Sorgay a break. The Russian flew backward from the impact right over his heart. The Stechkin stuttered in Sorgay's death grip, the 9mm round spraying the ceiling. Bolin backed out and followed Katz down the stairs to the garage. Katz and Bolin walked past Kaiser Wilhelm Church as a cluster of police cars and vans screeched to a halt in front of the corner of the Europa Center. Black-clad emergency alert police stormed out of the vans, MP5s in hand, and raced into the club.
You still want to get dinner?
Nah, I'm not hungry anymore.
Ready to go home?
Bolin glanced over his shoulder.
Yeah, I'm done here.
Mac Bolin, Caged, is a graphic audio production. Mac Bolin is a trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2002, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Thomas Penny, Terence Aselford, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Jeff Baker, Casey Jones, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, Karen Carbone, Dolores King-Williams, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers, Kyle Unaver, and Greg Reinfeld. The Mac Bolin theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Brian Patton, Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Dan Smith. Book adapted for graphic audio by Gerald Rudolph. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Mac Bolin, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Stony Man and The Executioner. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
When tragedy strikes, Stony Man is on the move.
She's dead.
Who? Who's dead?
Amanda Cash. She's been murdered. And if it weren't for me, she'd still be alive.
But this is no ordinary situation.
This assassination was bought and paid for, and they're going to strike again.
The web of deceit stretches farther than they could have ever known.
There's a situation in Nairobi.
The trail leads to Hong Kong.
San Francisco is their next target.
Three teams.
Rafe, watch out!
Five villains.
Die, American scum!
No one left to trust.
Teresa, are you okay?
I am perfectly all right, but you always let the woman get under your skin.
And a worldwide plot to turn the world against America.
When I am successful, all the evidence of this plague will point directly to Homeland Security. Nothing can stop me now.
And soon, the world will be mine to taste.
The clock is ticking.
If we don't act soon, America as we know it will cease to exist.
Stony Man 83, Doom Prophecy. 7 pulse-pounding hours only from Graphic Audio. Medellin, Colombia. A cartel of international organized crime leaders gathers to discuss business.
We've lost many men in the past 2 weeks. We need to place the blame where it belongs, on the heads of our enemies.
Who I understand you still have not identified.
Yes, how do you propose to find these enemies?
Fortunately, we have a prisoner.
You suffered much.
You've been lucky so far.
All a matter of perspective.
Perhaps. But your luck won't last much longer. They're giving you to me. And before I'm done, you'll beg for death. You'll give me everything I want and more.
Mac Bolan, his brother Johnny Gray, pilot Jack Grimaldi, and Agent Keely Ross have been making it difficult for the cartel to execute their plan to take control of the Caribbean island of Isla de Victoria. But the tables have turned.
Look, Johnny, if Mac's alive, they've been working on him for the better part of 2 days. It may already be too late.
I don't believe that, Hal. They're using him for bait. I've already got the next move planned.
Which is?
Kick ass, take names, leave messages.
The three-person strike force willingly enters the enemy's trap. Johnny and Keely parachute into Isla de Victoria itself to rescue Bolan from his captors. Waiting for them is Garrett Tripp, security chief for the cartel and leader of the rebel forces.
All right, this is a real thing, people. Protect yourselves, but keep an eye out for potential POWs. Now get your ragged asses into gear and move!
What do we do now?
We need to disengage ASAP, ideally without losing sight of the hostiles.
Oh, right, because what could be simpler than that?
All right, we're having a chat.
What did you want to talk about?
Your friends are dead.
I don't know what you mean.
We didn't get to play with them the way I would have liked, but what the hell? Dead's dead. Maybe you'll meet them on the other side, an hour or two from now.
The Executioner number 310, Killing Heat. The conclusion of the Org Crime Trilogy, from Graphic Audio.
Evil finds new allies in the form of the Al-Jabbar, a terrorist cell that has never failed to eliminate exactly who they were aiming for, until they met Mac Bolan. This brotherhood of religious zealots will take any action, assault any stronghold, murder any dignitary in the name of attacking America. The only thing that equals their depravity is their hatred. Is the soldier up to the challenge? Especially when the hunt for evil leads him to American soil?
Quarry spotted.
They're members of the Al-Jabbar.
Those devils? I have heard of them. What on earth were they doing in Greece?
They tried to assassinate the American vice president. The Al-Jabbar just became my number one priority.
Mac Bolan, independent agent for Stony Man Farm, stands between a madman and the end of life as we know it. The head of the Viper, Abbas Aban, will stop at nothing to see his twisted dreams come true.
You're not gonna hurt me, are you?
Of course not. Since when do we kill journalists? All we want is information.
The Executioner will hunt his prey over land, sea, and air, even through the heart of a den of pure bloodthirst, an entire city of cold-blooded killers.
God. Damn it!
Mac Bolan number 90, Age of War.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.